And I know it's gonna be a lovely day.
Amplified Houston on 90.1 FM KPFT Pacifica Radio in Houston, Texas, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 in Huntsville, and streaming online at kpft.org. Amplified Houston is a collaboration of five nonprofit organizations: Baker Ripley, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Houston, Children at Risk, the Women's Home, the Houston Food Bank, and Houston's community radio station, KPFT Pacifica Radio. Listeners, all the programs you hear on KPFT are listener-supported. Become a sustaining member today by calling 713-526-5738 and pressing option 1. I am your host, Anna Coffey. It is my pride and privilege to serve as the CEO of the Women's Home. And this is Amplified Houston, the Women's Edition, where we talk to women doing hard things. In today's show, we'll talk with Katie Butterwick, Executive Director of the Cullen Trust for Healthcare. But first, Amplified Houston is supported in part by The Cottage Shop, a thrift store located at 811 Westheimer in Houston, which is owned and operated by The Women's Home, a 501c3 not-for-profit organization. Proceeds from The Cottage Shop pay for programs that help women reclaim their lives. Further information can be found at thewomenshome.org/cottageshop. All right, let's get into it. Katie, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Anna. It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have you. So let's jump right in. Tell us a little bit about your role at the Cullen Trust for Health and kind of what your journey has been
to get there. I feel really humbled to be part of a conversation for women who are doing and have done hard things. I am really grateful as I reflect back on how many strong and fabulous women opened doors for me and made space for me in my career. I've been in nonprofit work for 25 years, going on more than that. I just had a pretty significant birthday last week. And so
congratulations.
Talk of all the things. Yes, thank you. But it has been 25 years of nothing but nonprofit work in Houston. And I was reflecting too this morning. I don't think there's a job I've had that when I reported directly to a person who identified as male. So we have talked a little bit about, you know, the sector is predominantly female, but in fact, that's true. And the statistics bear it out. I mean, we're, 69-75% of our workforce and nonprofits are women. So that I count myself among them. I have worked in a lot of different areas. My path has taken me to higher ed, to environmental work, to healthcare, and now health philanthropy. I did a stint at the Hackett Center for Mental Health, where I was able to dive deeper into that area, which I care deeply about. I think factors into part of the conversation I hope we'll have today as well, in terms of like preserving and amplifying mental and behavioral health for those of us who are in this work. So that's my career. It's been a lot of fun. It has been a journey. It has been expanding. It has challenged me personally and professionally. And I have been through a lot of changes in life while still trying to manage what it is to be doing the challenging and rewarding work of our nonprofit sector. So,
Katie, our paths have crossed multiple times over 25 years, and it's been really fun to watch you grow and evolve and change in the sector. So, as I always state, like, this show is really inspired by the women who come to the Women's Home to do some of the hardest work of their lives. All of them have co-occurring mental health and substance use disorders. Right. And that is a really tough combination of things for a woman to have to work through. And what we see over and over again are women who are like just owning their lives and just doing so many incredible, brave, courageous things to really get their lives back. And so the show is a way of like really honoring that and saying, hey, you know, the world may think that they have a lot on their plate, and they do, but also there's a lot of stigma attached to their lives. And we are working really hard to flip the script on that and say, no, you don't understand. These women are strong. They're fierce. And there is nothing stronger than a woman who has broken and then rebuilds herself. So, so it's been my great pleasure to talk to women all over who have done hard things. And again, the power of connection comes up and the power of community comes up. And when we're facing hard things, that is often the place where we'll go for support and for healing, is the company of other people going through the same thing. So as you mentioned earlier, the field of I've got a gripe with the industry right now.
Please tell me.
Oh my goodness. Why do we call, this is going to be a little bit of a tangent here. Why do we call ourselves nonprofits? In what other industry do they define themselves by what they're not?
Yes. And why would you take a sector and define? Okay, so here we are in a culture, like it or not, arguments to the side, is capitalist. Yes. Profit is king. Profit is value. Profit is good.
It's what everybody wants.
And we define ourselves as not that, in fact. Right. Right? And so does that make our job harder? Yeah, maybe.
I think it leads to a lot of... I think it leads to people not taking our sector seriously, really.
Yeah.
I think it even affects, I've even had to tell board members, like, just because we're a nonprofit doesn't mean we shouldn't have profit. Because, you know, in those rare instances where we actually make a profit on something, I've had board members say, ooh, what are we going to do now?
They want to apologize for it.
It's okay. So I am on this one woman crusade, and maybe now you can join me, a two woman crusade. To flip the script on that as well, so that we are mission-driven. We are mission-driven. The mission is the point, right? So, for anyone who follows me on LinkedIn, please go and read. I have a post on this that went viral just the other day. So,
fabulous! I want to read it. Yeah. I'm good for you.
Anyway, in the mission-driven world, Katie, we'll get off our tangent now. In the mission-driven world. It is predominantly female, Katie. Why do you think that is? That stitching and sewing and mending of the world that mission-driven organizations
falls
to women. Tell us.
Okay. So I don't know, but I'm an art historian by training. So I love, you know, podcasts like Throughline and all these things that like go back to the history to understand why we are where we are in the present. Right. And in our illustrious United States, even in reading a little bit about Houston's history, I got to serve on board for the Houston History Association for many years. And I'll never forget some of the stories I heard there. And some of the folks on that board were actually women's history scholars in Houston. And so wrote books about kind of how women have sort of played a role in our city in more visible ways. And it seems like the mission-driven work, the work that wasn't of obvious capital benefit, has begun out of a tradition of volunteerism and leadership. And that those were roles that it was women who had, you know, were searching, I think, for a voice and a place to plug in and to make a difference. And then also, you know, because doors were not available to them, we know this, right? That's no new information, that the workforce has not always been welcoming of women. And so I think as a woman, I can resonate with this, that you want to contribute, you want to give back, you want to be involved. And so a lot of that began with volunteering. Mm-hmm. And with recognizing, maybe with some unique vision, because I think we are born systems thinkers in these caregiving roles that we sort of find ourselves in culturally, and realizing kind of who is the least among us, like who is struggling, understanding struggle and wanting to try to build pathways and supports out of it. You've mentioned community already, but isn't that something that I think we do well and come to naturally, which is this ability to build community? And I think it is not unique to women, because I think men have that ability as well. But I do think it is almost incumbent upon us in the roles that we tend to be assigned. Mm-hmm. Right. And so why we persist in it, is a question that I do have, because it's not easy work. I think it takes a toll. it is an professionalization of the work that we do in our many of our home lives, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so to kind of actively choose to make a career in a space that's asking of you, you know, compassion and energy and persistence and resilience and all of these sort of better angels of our nature qualities.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know what that says about us, but I do think it takes a disproportionate toll, right? And so I don't know. I mean, I struggle with why we persist in the work, but I think for some, the nonprofit sector has offered flexibility in ways that maybe the corporate sector has not.
That's interesting.
But I think I do hear that to this day when I go on site visits and talk to folks. They're like, our employees choose to work with us because we can offer them flexibility in their schedule. They can get off at 3 to go do the things they have to do, pick up their kids, and et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Right. And so these are generalizations, clearly. Let us be clear about that, too. Yeah. Like, this is not everyone's experience.
Of course, sure, yeah.
Yeah, but nonetheless, like I have heard that offered as a piece. But I think another thing, if I were to have a beef with something right now, Anna, it's this question that, and now this proven fact that so often when women move into a space professionally, the salaries decrease across the board for anyone in that profession.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
It still does. I know it does.
It still happens.
It just is.
And in our nonprofit sector, I think we, you know, there's like a 25% pay differential for women and men doing the exact mm-hmm. same positions. So mm-hmm. even here, these ugly pieces of inequity have persisted into yeah. the nonprofit sector, which is unfortunate. And I think we have work to do and an opportunity, though, to lean into the power, because women are now more in leadership roles. It's, you know, it, like it or not, we are. And the other thing I will offer that's kind of encouraging to me is how much wealth is concentrated in the hands of women now.
Yes.
Right?
More and more, actually.
More and more. And yeah. the agency for, because we outlive men, let's just mm-hmm. be frank.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
And the agency for investing that wealth in whatever way may feel right, mm-hmm. investing that time is on women, right? So we do find there's an opening there, and you see it. Yeah. You know, you see these big name philanthropists like mm-hmm. Melinda French Gates and Mackenzie Scott, and you know, this transformational yeah. giving. And I love that, right? And I do want to see more women really owning that power that they have.
Yeah, now, absolutely.
Like it or not. Anyway, I went all over the place. I didn't answer your question.
Yeah, no, that's great. That was great. We're going to take a quick commercial break to talk about how this radio show is coming to you. KPFT takes no advertising dollars at all. And almost every one of the people who work to bring you the show are volunteers. Please call 713-526-5738 and press option 1 to become a sustaining member today. We are back with Katie Butterwick, who is the executive director of the Cullen Trust for Healthcare. And we are talking about women in the mission-driven world and why is it still predominantly female. But Katie, I'm going to take a little bit of a different path now. And let's talk a little bit about the kind of darker side of yeah. women working together. So because we are kind of still under a patriarchal system, there can be, I don't know that I'd blame it on the patriarchy. I mean, I can find
okay.
a lot of
go ahead.
Okay.
I mean, let's recognize it could just as easily, it has been a matriarchy in the past, which probably is yes. bad. For, yes. You know, this is yeah. the moment we're in. It's yeah. okay.
How do you think that has shown up Ooh. In predominantly female, how does the patriarchy still show up in predominantly female settings? Do you see like some tensions in
oh,
the
yeah.
settings sometimes?
I do. And I'm going to talk about this purely for my own walk, because I think that's probably the fairest way to approach it. Mm-hmm. I recognized in myself, I don't know, probably 20 or 30 years ago, that I was playing into those roles. And it was around when other women would enter the room, right? and how you look them up and down, size them up, compare, you know, don't necessarily offer grace as your first reaction. Mm-hmm. That was my, I caught myself doing this.
Mm.
You know? And in the same way that I think, because I will just say it, like in the same way that we're steeped in a racist society, right? We are steeped in a patriarchal society, and we have tropes and unconscious bias in and all around that, right? And so I definitely saw and felt my hackles come up a little bit when other mm-hmm. women would enter the space, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it just occurred to me, you know, that was, I mean, normal and natural, but recognizing it and then A, keeping my mouth shut, right? Because sometimes impetus was like to kind of whisper to your partner, you know, like, you know, who does she think? I mean, this is stuff that we see and we have to push back against, right?
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
It persists. Anna, think about like what our young women are dealing with this rise in social media and exposure and whatever, and body image. And I mean, have we made any progress in this area? I don't know, but
not much. No, I don't think we have really.
I don't think
much.
We have at mm-hmm. scale. You know, I think there's individual examples, but it's not where I'd want it to be. But individually, I think what it is, as with so many negative self-talk or intrusive thoughts, right? Like the work is to recognize it, to kind of name it, to give it less power and to not respond out of it, right? Take a deep breath, give a moment, mm-hmm. and instead come back with gratitude, grace, and openness, right? These are the things that they can be exhausting and tiring. And when you're feeling overwhelmed, when you're working in a sector that's faced with injustice every day, when you then have to turn around, go home and do all the unseen, unpaid labor that keeps mm-hmm. the world moving, right?
Like, it's a lot.
Entity in the mm-hmm. on the planet if we were paid for it. When you're doing all that, right, overwhelm is your friend, is your neighbor. It's with you all the time. And so mm-hmm. to then rise above that and have arms open and heart open to everyone around you is hard.
It is.
But I think it does show up. And it, you know,
there's a special kind of pain, I think, that comes when you experience it from someone
who's had your experience.
Has had your experience, right? Mm-hmm. So you know, there's been women in the workplace throughout my career who have, especially in the very beginning of my career, who have really sought to kind of punch down.
Yep.
I don't know if it's intimidation or they work so hard to get to where they're at that they see anybody coming behind them as a threat.
100%. I mean, this is the effect of trauma, right, Anna? Like, and this is trauma in the workplace, the trauma of, you know, being discriminated against, of being belittled, of being doubted, you know, these mm-hmm. things and worse, right? We know, again, like disproportionate risk for more serious trauma, right?
You know,
abuse of all kinds that women endure. And so, you know, that, and especially in your population of women, like that has a real effect. I mean, it doesn't go away. And it does feel like a particular betrayal when you receive it from someone who you would hope would have empathy for your experience, having kind of walked in at least similar shoes, if not the mm-hmm. exact same ones.
It
does feel like a unique kind of betrayal. And I will offer on the counter of that, I have seen the kind of examples that make me hopeful, where you have women who have moved through career building time, have withstood a lot of discrimination and hardship, and when given the chance to influence policy and to support younger women coming up in the workforce, have leaned into that, right? So, I mean, there are these examples too of, but I think the work is for that to be the norm. You know, there's a point at which we have to let go of our own experience and pain and not try to haze others, right?
Like, right.
You know, this idea of like, well, I went through all that, so you can too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it takes a big person to not hold that but that's not, I don't think that's going to get us anywhere if we continue.
So Katie, where do we start to address this phenomenon in our women's kind of collective?
Well, I think one of the things we have before us is opportunities to look really in hard ways at very concrete decisions that we make when in leadership, right? And one of the ones that comes to mind is like paid family leave, okay? You know, when I think about leaders in the mission-driven field, you have before you the opportunity to really stand on the importance of offering your team, male or female, right? Your team benefits that just amplify their humanity, okay? Like allow people to manage life, you know, paid time off, insurance where possible, like really getting serious about these things. I mean, you look in the literature, it's like, what's the number one, you know, challenge in the mission-driven sector? It's workforce. People don't want to come into this work. They don't want to sit where you're sitting, Anna. It's a hard damn job. Let me just say, right?
It is hard. It is absolutely hard.
You are not afforded the same level of wraparound support and, you know, that other executives are afforded. And you're doing work that, pardon me, is probably a million times more complicated, right? So, so that's, you know, that's a problem. But nonetheless, I think, you know, the opportunity, and I do see increasingly sitting on the funder side, people raising this up and saying, like, we've been too long complicit in a system that is not adequately supporting its workers, right? Who are in turn trying to serve an underserved population. They are themselves underserved because their organization can't make an effective case to funders to provide them the benefits that they deserve and need.
So true. So true.
So I think it's incumbent upon philanthropy, frankly, and upon government and whoever is funding this work to really take a hard look at what we're actually creating by underinvesting in our workforce. And so as women, let's think about the things that would make a difference in our lives, right? We're all, many in the sandwich generation. You've got parents who are aging. You've got children who are coming up. You've got to have time and flexibility. You show me a woman who is given those things and won't overperform, right?
It's so true.
It's not, I have never in my whole career seen anybody who took advantage of those things, right?
That's right. That's right. Absolutely.
So I think we just got to kind of look at the tools that are available to us and start standing for some of the things that really would make a difference in people's lives.
Totally agree. Well, so Katie, what message do you have for women who are really tackling hard things, maybe in the workplace or maybe in their personal lives? Do you have something that you want them to hear?
I want them to hear that, oh man, this is hard. I want them to hear that in a society steeped in individualism and bootstrapping, pull yourself up.
Oh, I hate that.
I do too. I think I would offer the call to lean into what you know works, which is find somebody else to help you, right? Like find someone else who's walking the walk, reach out to them, offer that little bit of vulnerability to ask for help and accept it because you're worth it. I think that that is something that we are sort of interestingly trained not to do. We are trained to help, not to accept it. And so I think our work in doing hard things is to understand that we are not enough to do it by ourselves only. And we have to like get more open to accepting help. And this is from somebody who is horrible at asking for and receiving help. Let me just be clear. Like, I mean, it is not my superpower, but I will say it's transformational. Yeah. And it is the only way I think we move forward because we can't do this stuff alone. We are biologically engineered for connection. Our whole systems, they just work better when you're not isolated. And, you know, there's nothing you've done that means that you deserve that kind of isolation, right? And somewhere there is someone willing to walk it with you and just hang on and find them. I mean, I think that's... The health is so hard, but it's so important. We have to. We have to do it.
That's great advice. And it is so much what the Women's Home is built on is just that power of connection and building the community around you that will help get you through the hard times.
Yep, that's right.
So one last question I love to ask my guests. What is bringing you joy these days?
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Listen, I am going to look to my left and see what brings me joy right now. So my front yard, many people who know me know this. We, every spring, we plant a prairie in our front yard. So we have blue bonnets out there. We have primrose. We have, you know, all these different flowers that are
lovely.
Yeah. Huh? And so that for me is a really joyful place. The ability to step outside, to reconnect, to root myself and to watch this thing just happen. Right. In Houston, what we have 1 week of fall/winter/spring. Like, I feel like we don't have a whole lot of it. But that little patch of prairie in my front yard helps me to kind of extend spring, which is such a wonderful, wonderful time. And the thing that's even more magical, Anna, is that it becomes a place of connection. So we have neighbors that change their walking route, you know, so that they'll walk by the house so they can see the blue bonnets. We have people who come and sort of apologetically place their kids in the front yard. And we're like, no, that's what it's here for, because they want to take pictures of the blue bonnets, you know?
Oh, that's so sweet.
So that is in this opportunity to just kind of say like, no, yeah, it is technically our space, but we want people in it. It's there for you. Like, just, you know, we don't own this. This is
what
something
a cool thing.
Yeah, super cool. So that's giving me joy right now. And there's stuff blooming and going, even in the midst of allergy season, all over Houston. So step outside and get into it.
I love it. Okay. I want to thank our guest, Katie Butterwick. It's been a delight to have you on the show. And I hope you'll come back again another time. And what a great tribute to Women's History Month, too.
100%. Let's not miss that.
No, I know. It's perfect.
Oh, okay. Anna, thank you. Thank you for your work. Thank you for all of your collaborators on this wonderful program, and really appreciate it.
Thank you, Katie. Amplified Houston is supported in part by The Cottage Shop, a thrift store located at 811 Westheimer Road in Houston, which is owned and operated by the Women's Home. Proceeds from The Cottage Shop pay for programs that help women reclaim their lives. Be sure to stay tuned for Gulf Streams with Weston Twardowski for the latest environmental and climate news in the Gulf Coast region and beyond. This is Anna Cole.
The Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council present the story of Cynthia and Ed.
My mother was always very active and independent, and she was familiar with her neighborhood. But one day, out of the blue, she stopped at the stop sign for much longer than usual. And she didn't know whether she should go forward or turn or just stay at the stop sign. She wasn't even really sure where she was at. She was very concerned. It was very unsettling for her.
It's important for you to talk to someone about it, to bring the family in on it. I felt so much better after my son told me, Mom, I don't want you to worry or be afraid. I'll be there for you and we'll figure it out.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. Visit alz.org/ourstories to learn more. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Getting a flu shot helps us stay healthy, so we don't miss out on what matters. Like that family movie night your daughter can't live without. Yeah, can't do that. Every year, millions of people in the U.S. get the flu. Especially now, no one has time to miss out on moments that matter. So get your flu shot. Find out more at getmyflushot.org. Brought to you by the AMA, CDC, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Clint Broussard. You're listening to KPFT Houston. Have you noticed a lack of country music in the Houston airwaves? Well, I'm excited to announce that we have a new HD3 channel that is all classic country all the time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.